Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of American Criminal. In our latest season, the child of Italian immigrants sets out to achieve the American dream. And if he has to spill some blood along the way, so be it. Listen to American Criminal Al Capone wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get ad-free access to the entire season first, subscribe at IntoHistory.com.
This video is brought to you by Astapro.
We got to start the show, Michael. Gosh.
And man. How? Let's watch the
God
show.
Damn.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Michael, dude, this is a journey, man. I was like gripped from beginning to every episode. Every single episode was so good. Everyone was thought-provoking, enriching, character-driven, different. that's probably one of the biggest takeaways I have. Is like they did something different every single episode.
Yeah,
they explored something different every time. And the revelations here, you know what I love so much about it, and I do want to hear your thoughts about what they did with the very in the flashback when Walton Goggins is listening in. I love how they manage to keep these truth bombs, no pun intended, keep these truth bombs in a way where they're getting this exposition, but it's so telling of the relationship of the wife and their dynamics and what led to them being apart as established in the first episode, that as you're getting this exposition, which is like, oh man, how terrible. It's also character narrative simultaneously. It is shocking. I'm so curious for you, as someone who like knows the Fallout world, is there something in here in this particular episode, this final episode, that you thought was like, wow, that was surprising. That was shocking. Other than, of course, getting the Vegas setup.
I'm like so, no pun intended, blown away by this episode. And you've known me a long time. I'm not usually left speechless. I usually always have something.
I'm going
to
just align your mic tiny bit.
Align.
There you go.
The fact that Vault-Tec managed to, in essence, obliterate the new California Republic at its like height of power is like so devastating that history in essence like repeated itself. And I think that is like such a like, oh, it's like such a sucker punch, but also it's so, it makes perfect sense. There's been a lot of indication, like, I'm one of those people, like, when you play the game and you go through, like, all the different, like, vaults and all the different buildings, you come upon the different consoles, and you can, like, read all the different entries. I'm one of the people that reads every single entry just to digest every bit of the lore, you know? And, like, you can contextually, like, put together that. The question was always like, who dropped the bomb first? This confirmed, but not necessarily confirmed, right? Like, it indicated that we could drop the bomb first, but it didn't say definitively that we did drop the bomb first. But it further adds fuel to the fire that we may very well have dropped the bombs on ourselves.
I mean, they have to have... Do you know anything about the behind the scenes of who they... They must have worked in conjunction with the video game creators.
So Todd,
that if they're going to mess with this, is
Todd Howard is the executive producer on the project. And
this is canon to the game.
This is all canon.
Yeah. So
and so okay. and it was really smart because this takes place, I think, about 10 years or so after Fallout 4, which is the last canonical piece of the Fallout universe.
Vegas was before Fallout 4?
Yeah, just a little bit before. And yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy. You know, the interesting thing about Fallout lore, though, and it's kind of hard to explain it, right? Like, it's a role-playing game. So sure. In every Fallout game, you decide what happens, which means game to game, they have to kind of decide ultimately what happened,
yeah,
even though that might not be the path that you went.
Sure.
So in this one, the Brotherhood of Steel, like, clearly got wrecked. and so I'm really curious, like, in New Vegas, there's a lot of different, like, options that you could have gone with. There's a lot of different factions that may or may not exist anymore that are going to add so many interesting elements. And I thought that was a really interesting part about this, is this basically implied that, like the Enclave, which we only really saw in the Michael Emerson in the opening episode or two.
The, like, scientists and stuff.
The scientists, yeah, and stuff. So, like, they, like, it's so interesting to me, the choices that they made, but really, like, for you, did you feel like it was all comprehensive? Like, did it all...
There were times I had to... I'm not sure. I feel like I've only had to ask you a couple of questions.
Yeah.
I feel like for the most part, that's what I find so enriching about when you're telling me these things.
Yeah.
Is I didn't feel lost for the immediate story, nor was it just about, like, it wasn't like watching Tenet, you know, where I'm like, I kind of get what's happening right now, but it looks cool. So I'll just watch it. Like, I was able to get involved in the story and the characters, and I could understand what was happening. And I think the show did a really, like, they extracted the right DNA per scene and per introduction of, like, even with the Brotherhood and stuff, just to get enough. And then you talk, and I'm like, oh, I could get, like, expanded knowledge if I play the games and get all that other stuff. Yeah.
And I think that's the fun thing about even playing the games, right? Yeah. Like, some people are literally just in it for, like, I want to build a fort. you know, like I want to just, like, experience, like, the horror of, like, exploring an abandoned vault or whatever it is. And I think that's what's fun about this show is if I'm, like, a fan of just, like, horror, or I'm, like, a fan of action, like... Just in this final episode alone, we did so much genre hopping, and it was so seamless. And there's just, like, one moment the helicopters are flying up, and you're like, man, this is, like, you could start playing, like Creedence Clearwater Revival and, like, you know, Fortunate Son. You'd be like, man, that's a great Vietnam.
Yeah.
You know, and next thing you know, you have the muzzle flash going off, and you're in an action film, or in a horror film, rather. And it's, like, it's brilliant.
You know what I just realized what this show did?
Yeah.
It told you the Vault Tech lie. You know, it starts off where Kyle MacLachlan, the dad, Henry, you're in Vault Tech, and it looks like they're the heroes, they're the protagonists, and then he's kidnapped by the baddie, and the ghoul's a bad guy, and all these things. And as the story progresses, by the time you get to the end, it's the complete opposite.
I don't want to spoil any of the games in any way, shape, or form. But that's where Fallout, I think, always succeeds the most, is that you will always begin your adventure with a very, I think, a good, clear, moral understanding of who you are and what you stand for and what your objective is, and the realities of the wasteland, and then the realities of, like, really brilliant writing and character development will send you on this really fantastic journey that will ultimately always end you in that situation where maybe it's not your dad that you have the gun pointed at the head at, but you always have that sort of quandary. And, you know, I found there was a moment in this episode where you had the POV of Lucy and Maximus, and they're both going through these decisions, and I'm, like, experiencing it as though I am playing that character. And I thought that was like, it's one of those things that for a role-playing game adaptation is such an impressive thing to achieve on screen. You know, I think the Last of Us did such a phenomenal job at capturing, I think, the personality and, like, the spirit and the character. This was able to capture a whole element of choice and decision and nuance that I don't think I've ever really seen done before in a video game adaptation of television. And, you know, full credit to The Last of Us creative team and a lot of the interviews with the Fallout creative team, they like were praising The Last of Us for paving the way of being like, oh, no, this can be done. You were a big fan of The Last of Us, right?
I was a huge fan of, I mean,
of the game and
the game. The Last of Us 2 is arguably my favorite game of all time. Yeah. And I really did love the show.
Yeah.
But that is the difference, though, is that is an adaptation of a very specific story.
Sure.
Where this is a continuation. And this is an original story.
Sure.
In the same world. That is also a continuation of the timeline, or from what I gather you're saying.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a different experience. And I'm like, this is probably what they should be doing more of, yeah. Depending on what you're adapting. Like if you're adapting the world of this, it makes more sense. I think the way they introduced the world via through the characters is what makes it so excellent. Like,
sure.
Like they wrote great protagonists, and I love how in the end they all get what they want, but it's not
what they want.
It's not ultimately what they wanted. Yeah. Like Maximus gets the victory of getting knighted, and everything rings false.
Yeah.
She finds her dad and truth bombs, you know, and finds her mom too. And
yeah.
Go like,
that was devastating.
I think they, you know, they, the writing team on this show, I from a take, it sounds like the games do it, but the writing team on this show, what I just really commend them for is we've all seen the mistakes that happen where it's like you're either going to get so much information, but it's not really tied to your characters. Yeah. And then here you're not even really noticing it because it's so seamless.
Yeah.
They weave it together in a way where you're like, oh shit, I'm getting all the information, but it's also completely driving the narrative of the characters.
Well, I know I sound like a broken fiddle record. see what I did there?
That's
no,
clever.
Not great. All right.
Clever.
But we have experienced every bit of exposition through the lens and perspective and the organic journey of each of these characters.
Yeah.
And it has made it so much more palpable and enjoyable than just like a never-ending lore dump. And frankly, it's like the first time that there has been a multi POV show, at least in recent memory that I can think of, that I've like actually really enjoyed.
Yeah.
Like probably since like House of the Dragon. If there's any others that have.
That's a really good point. Because, yeah, I mean, like, we're not just talking about video game adaptations that fail it. It's like book adaptation shows fail
book
it.
Book shows,
anime adaptations.
It's a hard medium.
It's a hard thing when there's a big world and a bunch of rules to, like, oh, you got to really construct characters around this.
Yeah.
And I think they really found a way to make it character first. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring us. So some fun facts about me. I've been seeing an ENT the past couple of months. Got a CT scan done for my allergies, and right now I'm trying to find time to get deviated septum surgery. So like many of you, I am someone who's tried pretty much every nasal spray you can think of because I have difficulty breathing through my nose, which leads to day-to-day and sleeping problems on a consistent basis. So before agreeing to this, I wanted to try them out myself because this is a serious thing I deal with. They provided me with free samples. This is my second bottle. This is without a doubt the best nasal spray I have ever used. That's not some talking point. That's my very own personal testimony. Genuinely, for me, it's fantastic and lives up to how it's advertised. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter solution available. It gets to work in just 30 minutes while other sprays take hours to kick in. It's also the only one out there that's steroid-free for 24-hour relief. Astapro has seriously changed the game for me, offering full prescription strength relief from nasal congestion, runny nose, and sneezing. The difference this makes is phenomenal. It's kind of insane how this relief through my breathing and nostrils just kicks in and I'm back in action really fast. So if you're like me, battling with nasal allergies and looking for relief, get fast-acting nasal allergy or symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can Astapro and go. It's faster with Astapro, bro. I saw that commercial. Astapro, it's faster, bro. That's Astepro allergy.com. Remember, use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies. Thank you again, Astapro, sincerely.
Well, it was an interesting... And I'm curious what the creative process was, right? Like, I'm sure the initial gut instinct is this is a single player game where you have a singular protagonist, so it should have a singular POV. And then I'm almost imagining, like, what does that writer's room look like? Where it's like, well, I like to play as a character that leans towards the Brotherhood of Steel.
Yeah.
Well, I like to play as like a gunslinger, kind of bad character. Well, I like to play as the goody two shoes that is a do-gooder that helps everybody. Yeah. And eventually they probably realize, well, give him a little bit of everybody in that. And ultimately, and maybe this wasn't their end goal, but in a way they've organically achieved, and I know if there's any Walking Dead listeners here, hi. Say it. Anything.
The ones who live.
Thank you. I need it. But like something that I've complained about the Walking Dead, not the ones who live, but the original series, is that it really struggled in transitioning with the multi POVs into trying to become this like faction based drama. It was like either too exposition heavy, trying to be this big thing, and it lost its like special character, like connective tissue, and it just couldn't figure out what it was. This show has somehow managed to, without losing that personal touch, still create this bigger world where I can almost imagine it, whether through spinoffs, whether through just the continuation of this main thread of storyline. They've now set up, like, there's a really interesting power vacuum. Now they're setting up this idea of rebuilding the world, and there's power coming back, and there's a need for civilization. There's a lot of interesting stuff that they can do to make this more macro while continuing to experience it through the lens of these characters in a way that feels organic and right.
This is one of the best seasons of television I've ever
full
seen.
Stop. Like, full stop.
Even looking at Walton Goggins, it's like he was giving two completely different performances, yeah. Right? In the 50s or whatever, 50s?
Yeah.
Or retro 50s?
In the 2070s.
But it's supposed to like feel like...
Yeah, and it's retro futuristic, yeah. But it's the 2070s.
Yeah, it's supposed to... Yeah, that's what I meant. So that, and then where he is 200 years from now as the ghoul. And then by the time you get to here, right with that one line of like looking for my family. And then when he's talking back to Lucy, you see that, the full tethering of how it's come full circle, this performance that it is the same. Like you always knew it was the same character and you could see where the line is. But then once you like peel back a little bit of that, get rid of that mystery, it like, bam, it all marries together. So perfectly. And it's like, it was like haunting, you know, and unsettling.
Yeah.
And funny and weird. I think this is one of the best season ones of, they could totally botch season two, but.
No, it's never too late to botch season two.
Season one. That's one of the best.
I think it's without a doubt my favorite bit of television I've watched this year.
Yeah, no, it's powerful TV.
Man. I think the thing that's most powerful about it is I don't have a least favorite episode. I can't think of an episode that
they all
like,
oh, sort of bleed together.
Yeah,
at a certain point.
Was just a cohesive across the board. I enjoyed every minute of it.
Yeah.
All right. Outside of the ghoul. Who is your favorite character?
Lucy, for sure.
Okay.
I love Lucy. I love Lucy. Yeah. They didn't realize what I said. Yeah. I mean, like, it's the funny thing is, like, when the ghoul's on screen, he's the most captivating.
Sure.
I mean, Walton Goggins, it's really hard.
Yeah. It's phenomenal.
It's really hard to beat Walton Goggins. Like, Walton Goggins is, like, an amazing actor.
Yeah.
It's got to be Lucy. Dude, who's yours?
I love Dog Meat. He's a very good boy.
Sure.
He's done a very good job. Despite being put into some very precarious situations.
Absolutely.
I think Lucy's, I agree, a phenomenal job. There's just like some subtle acting out of, what is the name of the overseer in the,
Which overseer?
In Vault 33.
Oh, I forget her name.
What's her name? Oh man, that's gonna drive me crazy.
Debbie.
Her performance, like,
is that it?
Yeah, I think it is Debbie. No, but actually, that was a good.
Yeah.
Well, Sally, Debbie, one of those. Little Debbie, little Sally.
little Debbie.
Anyway, I thought the way that she was able to just like subtly terrify the actual living hell out of me.
Yeah.
And when you go back, like to rewatch this and recontextualize that, like the woman with the eye patch, Debbie, all these characters are from the past and are middle management and played an active role in the end of the world. That is horrific.
Yeah.
And adds such a dense, fascinating layer to all of this. So yeah, I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed, I think the Vault-Tec plot, Vault-Tec has always fascinated me. And I think the scary thing is, like, as crazy as it sounds, it's also not that crazy sounding.
I think the only part of the show that I...
Oh, we're about to fight.
It's not about the Vault-Tec.
It was Jell-O. It was the gelatin, right?
What?
I don't know.
The only part of the show that I thought was a little perfunctory of like, okay, yeah, they're the lead, so they're going to do this. But I didn't quite... I love them individually, but I didn't quite feel for it was the
Maximus
romance.
And Lucy.
Maximus and Lucy.
It was forced.
It was the one part where I was like... these two don't have romance in their lives, so it makes sense they would fall for each other fast. But at the same time, I didn't really.
But it didn't strike me so much as romance as much as like...
I thought they were just like buddies.
Two kids that are of sexually mature age who feel things and who have not ever had any expressions of like physical intimacy and touch. Like, I don't know. It didn't strike me as like... I think they might be confusing it as that because they have no education or exposure, really.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, Lucy also just... the way in which they talked about sex, like, they don't strike me as the type that really have a good... have their, no pun intended, head wrapped around it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's fair.
But... No, I agree, though. I mean, Maximus is interesting because I would ebb and flow with the... But also, it's like, it's a character that's been through some crazy trauma and grew up in, like, a military cult. So...
I love how soft he was, like, in his performance. You know, like, and I think that surprised me because when you always imagine, like, a character in a suit like that, you imagine him sounding, like... tougher. Like, it is his voice. He had a soft voice. Like, he played it like a boy the whole time.
Yeah.
It's like, he was that same boy who lost his home. You know, yeah. I thought he actually did an excellent job. I feel like that's a performance that could probably be overlooked, honestly, and maybe perhaps criticized, but I actually really loved what he was doing.
Well, I'm going to give like a weird, interesting, as like the resident Star Wars guy and the Real Rejects. A lot of that is everything that I wanted out of like the stormtrooper arc for John Boyega for Finn. Mm. Like this idea of like a stormtrooper who becomes,
you're just
like
comparing black people who wear suits.
There it is.
Nass, is that what you're doing? Is that what you're doing, Michael?
No, just somebody that from a very young age was indoctrinated into a military cult that worked right, his way up.
Hurry, you talked your way out of that one.
I had my talking points ready to go, Greg. I brought the receipts.
Well, I had the comments ready to go for you.
I had the receipts, sir. That being said, both of them are fantastic actors. And I think John Boyega was given a horrifically awful script. But I think this has been really neat. And I think the other cool thing that they've set up now is that Maximus is now in a position of actual power and influence. And I'm curious to see what does that mean for the paradigm of balance in the wasteland. And like, you know, I'm just excited. Yeah. And I really hope that they've started filming right now as we're speaking. But Greg, final thoughts?
Final thoughts, man. I'm like a 10 out of 10 on this show.
Are you going to play the games?
Dude, I'm still making my way through Red Dead Redemption 2. I picked that up a couple months ago. And
you're never gonna finish.
It's a very long. Like, I'm only on chapter 3. I'm playing this for like,
you are never
50 hours.
Finish, Greg. You're never gonna get there. It's not gonna happen. Dutch.
I've heard so many people be like, Dutch is one of the best villains. I'm like, he's not even like a villain yet. What is going on?
You just gotta keep giving him his money. You got to give it so that we can all get out of here, Greg.
Arthur.
Arthur.
Arthur Morgan.
I'm telling you, Arthur.
Hey, Dutch. Arthur.
That's the game. That's all I'm at in the game so far.
I will say this. If nothing else, you should play New Vegas before season two. If nothing else.
I'd like to play because the funny part, here's the funny part about this entire journey.
Yeah.
I have no clue what the game play would actually be like.
When you were like, this reminds me of like if we were going on a mission. I was like, that's funny.
Because this is probably not right.
That's not how that works.
Because, you watch The Last of Us show and you're like, oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you fight zombies and shit and you hunt. Like, it's probably easy to like correlate what a game might be like.
Yeah.
And then for me here, I'm like, I still have no clue what the game would actually be or feel like, or what the gameplay would be.
If this was accurate to the game, we would still be in Vault 33. And I would be looking through every single drawer for any piece of scrap until I am over encumbered and can't walk fast anymore.
The game sounds forever.
The game is forever.
The game sounds very long.
The thing about Bethesda games, Greg, is that Skyrim came out over a decade ago and people are still playing it. Fallout 4 came out over a decade ago. And people are still playing it. I continue to play these games over and over and over again because they are just marvelous and magic. And no matter how many times you play through, you find new things each time. And I think that is just absolutely magic.
Absolutely.
So anyway, final thoughts, 10 out of 10 from me. Honestly, I'm like giddy with radioactive. I got a smile as big as Maximus. Greg and Hal. Hey, we'll see you on season two. In the meantime, what did y'all think of this amazing show? Did you love it? Did you hate it? Which game should Greg play first? Leave your comments below. Don't forget to hit that like. And if you want to watch more amazing, exciting, wondrous, fun, I'm running out of hyperlatives.
I have no idea.
Reactions. Be sure to hit that notification bell. We'll also let you know of impending nuclear apocalypses. Thank you for being here and a member of the Reject Nation. We love you and be safe out there. Bye.
Bye, guys. Thank you for being with us.